Welcome to the RSA Events Podcast, the home of world-changing ideas and debate.
Hello everyone, I'm Rebecca Ford and I'm head of the design programme here at the RSA. And it's my great pleasure to welcome you for this evening's special event, which we are delighted to be hosting in partnership with the British Council as part of Shabak, which is London's largest biennial festival of contemporary Arab culture. Just before we kick off this evening, a reminder that we are filming and live streaming tonight's event. So if you're joining us online, then welcome. It's great to have you with us. Please do get involved in the conversation on Twitter. You can let us know your thoughts and questions using the hashtag ConnectingCultures. And as that hashtag suggests, that is very much what tonight's discussion is all about. The brilliant speakers that we have gathered here this evening are designers whose work reflects, responds to, and connects cultures and communities both locally and globally. So specifically, they've both been engaged in cultural exchange programmes facilitated by the British Council. And to tell us a little bit more about that, I'm delighted to welcome Rahana Mukal to say just a few brief words to set the scene for tonight's conversation. So Rahana is Senior Manager at the British Council, leading a major multi-year culture and sports programme across the Gulf states, developing mutual understanding and respect through the sharing and appreciation of UK and Gulf culture and creating long-term arts and education relationships. Welcome, Rahana.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Is this on? Is it on? I'll just stand here. Thank you, everybody. You want me to stand on the stage? Thank you, everybody, for giving up your Monday sunny evening to be here with us at the RSA tonight. I'm delighted to see such a great turnout. As Rebecca said, I lead the culture and sport programme across the Gulf, which are the six countries often called GCC, Gulf Cooperation Council countries, and that includes Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Oman, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, which one did I miss? Qatar, of course. I should know them by now. I've been working in the region now for over 5 years and working primarily on running culture programmes and also sports programmes. At the British Council, we work in the area of cultural relations, and a large part of that is about developing co-developed projects and supporting exchange, mutual exchange, collaboration, new partnerships, that lead into projects that work on both sides, both in the Gulf and in the UK. We're here tonight because we're going to focus primarily on a design-based project. Design in the Gulf has been growing considerably. Some of you are probably quite familiar with Saudi Design Week, which has been running now for several years, and we're very proud to be working in partnership with Saudi Design Week. And I'd like to say a great big thank you to Basma Buzo and the team at Saudi Design Week if they're tuning in to listen to this event tonight. They are excellent collaborators. You're probably very familiar also with Design Days Dubai and Design Week. There's a real growing appetite, I would say, in the Gulf for design, not just design for commercial purposes, but also design that's more socially engaged and mission driven, which is what we're going to learn about today. So as part of the programme that I've been working on, we have taken designers from the UK out to the region to explore the countries and understand the context that we're operating in. And we've also brought designers from the Gulf to the UK to learn about UK culture and design. We have partnered with, for example, the Victoria and Albert Museum, where we ran a design workshop last year, enabling 20 young designers from across the Gulf to come to the UK and develop their professional practice in design. A large part of our work at the British Council out in the Gulf focuses primarily on capacity building and supporting young people to develop the culture and creative skills they need to be able to enter the careers in the creative and cultural economy. Some of you may know that the Gulf states are moving away from reliance on oil, and there's a real interest now in supporting the growth of the cultural and creative economies, and that's also in the area of education too, providing more creative and cultural opportunities for young people. In terms of the context, there's a lot of young people in the Gulf, large percentages. I think it's up to about 65% of the population in Saudi Arabia is under the age of 25. And these young people are very digitally savvy and internationally connected. They are mobile, they travel, and they get a lot of information online. So I won't say much more other than that we are delighted to have Morag here today and Abdulrahman, who we are collaborating with, and I will leave it over to them to say a bit more. If you want to know more about the work of the British Council, I will be here after the event, happy to talk to you. And also in our offices just down the road over in Spring Gardens, we have a wonderful exhibition about the work that we've been doing in the Middle East and North Africa on cultural heritage protection. So I hope I'll be seeing some of you a bit later on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rohanna. So now we have a chance to hear from two designers, and let me first just briefly introduce them. So joining us this evening, we have Abdulrahman Gazaz, who's a Jeddah-based architect who, with his brother Turki, is the founder of BrickLab, an interdisciplinary design studio whose projects range from public space interventions to installations, retail and housing. And in 2018, BrickLab designed the inaugural pavilion of Saudi Arabia at the 16th Venice Architectural Biennale. And their exhibit, Geographical Child's Play, is currently open at the British Museum as part of Shabak 2019. And Morag Myeskov. So from schools and hospitals to cultural hubs and town centres, Morag uses design to transform spaces into places, creating specific local responses to create community and build identity. So her use of colour, pattern, and positive messaging is instantly recognisable and elevates every context in which it's placed. And we were hugely proud when Morag was made a Royal Designer for Industry here at the RSA in 2017. She actually recently gave a very memorable address titled We Make Belonging to the Faculty here on this stage in November last year. So do check that out as well. Please join me in welcoming Abdulrahman and Morag. So Abdulrahman, could I ask you to kick us off by telling us a bit more about your work and the mission and values that drive your practice?
Our practice really was based on a mission, I'm sorry. It was based on a mission to really change how we view architecture and use design as a vehicle that can elevate a culture or elevate a city in itself. We were very fortunate to work on the Venice Biennale, but the most interesting thing for us is the conversations that we had along the way. We're interested in material research in a tactile way, but also in abstract conversations and abstract modes of research, whether it be through written form or presenting our works in exhibitions and cultivating arguments and critical thought. The most fascinating thing for us with every project is really to have a conversation, to create a space through a conversation. That's what I'm trying to focus on today when I speak to you all. To kind of backtrack to Venice Biennale, we worked with an Italian team, we exhibit, and it was literally through various conversations that every stage kind of developed into something more and more tactile. We ended up going to Brescia, 2 hours away from Venice, to physically develop the material together. We got sand from the river in that area. So we're always very interested in not only design, but how do you cultivate the physical environment that surrounds us to infiltrate the design that we're coming up with. So it's from concept to realization to really critically questioning what is the main reason behind everything that we do. And even with the Geographical Child's Play, what we tried to do is we were approached by Shabak to commission to do a project, but we really questioned what is our role as Middle Eastern artists. Is there a role as Middle Eastern artists? Design is universal language, so there's nothing really for us to showcase in this kind of Orientalist view of Middle Eastern art, but actually to critically question what is the very formation of Middle Eastern countries. So we decided to make, I don't have images of these here because they're very fresh still. But what we decided to do is that we looked at the configuration of the Arab League countries. There are 22 countries that have various political structures, social structures, and this idea of border. We started questioning what are these borders between these countries. We decided to make 22 colorful pieces of furniture that appeared like they are children's furniture. It has a complex form of like a jigsaw puzzle that fits within each other. It goes into four different formations. So again, it's kind of questioning those borders. If you kind of reconfigure things in a certain way, would it induce a question about the political structure that's there? We have a circular formation, a linear formation, and a square formation, but all of these kind of hint at democracy, monarchy, and all of these different kind of things that have been happening. And it was through these conversations that we kept having with Shabak, with our friends, and even with the people who are interacting with the work itself, is what truly makes the work have meaning to us. Do I go through here?
You can use this.
Oh. I've been waiting for it to go through, that's why. in the context of motion today, we kind of also, and I always speak in we, because as Brick Lab, we're a collective. We're not only me and my brother, but we always collaborate with artists, curators, photographers, any form of someone who's interested, we're always open, philosophers, historians. So we really believe in reinventing our country's public realm and urban spaces through that very that very simple notion or gesture that we're doing. I'd like to read a small... Yes, that would be lovely. Thank you. A very short extract from Hannah Arendt's book, The Human Condition. I don't know it by heart, so I'm just going to read it out. To live together in the world means essentially that a world of things, human artifacts, is between those who have it in common as a table is located around those who sit around it. The world, like every in-between, relates and separates men at the same time. This very interesting quote, always come, we go back to that, because there is an anthropological sense towards the built environment around us, or even the natural landscapes that we use. As people, we always perceive space either through design or either through just going to the beach and enjoying these different contrasts that you can really experience. This is a project that we're very happy to have worked on. It's a project in the historic quarter in Jeddah, which was commissioned. We were commissioned to do it as part of Art Week 2 years ago. I would safely say it's one of the few, and I would sadly say that it's one of the few contemporary interventions in historic buildings in Saudi Arabia. There is now, since the Vision 2020, Vision 2030, there's a lot of talking about arts and culture has become something big in Saudi now. It's like arts is something new. It hasn't been there. So it always kind of strikes a chord with us, is that, no, it's something that exists in the world around us, but also in the very way that we actually interact with spaces. We did a very simple intervention where we worked very closely with consultants that specialize in UNESCO World Heritage Sites to pour 4 centimeters of blue pigmented concrete, and therefore we called this project Indeterminate Plateaus, because everything was indeterminate along the whole process. Again and again, I keep saying that it's always through these conversations and questioning how you do things, how we can actually measure each door to enter, to abstract certain elements of architecture. We were also very lucky to work with Ali Kazma, who has his work at the very back. It's a seed bank of Norway, and it was for us always something very interesting. Saudi is a very hot country. You're working with a video that's actually portraying a seed bank for a post-apocalyptic future. it's always this notion of fiction. So I think for us, when we started working as BrickLab, we just simply questioned, what is our role? We started questioning, okay, I'm going to work in an office and mindlessly work on simple projects that appear simple to me, at least, or simple to us, but how do we actually contribute back to the places change the areas around us? So we have done that through conversations. We have started a collective called Draw Talks, where we bring three different professionals, be it writers, chemists, and even designers and filmmakers, to discuss very abstract topics that are based on extensive academic research that we do. And this very, very short period of us being able to do that has opened up doors to us to really understand the various professions that exist around us and to appreciate everyone that's around us in a way that we can bring them into architectural projects. This is very, I'm not sure if it's very common here, but I don't find it common in a lot of places in the world. And again, go back to the Venice Biennale, it was questioning critically what we can do with architecture and how we can portray Saudi Arabia for the very first time. Very much like Shubak Festival, it's how do we portray design rather than just say, here it is, this is Saudi Arabia. For us to enter a competition with this project and actually dream about working with the materials hands-on, actually coming into reality and creating this exchange and this exchange of knowledge that is so invaluable to us to be able to be in Venice, to work there for 2 months, is just something that we really tried to just wrap our head around. This was our kind of way to show Saudi Arabia in a way, or the entirety of the Gulf, that this is an Arabic seating, but it's something that you can actually enjoy. Everything is made out of resin. Resin is a petrochemical byproduct, which the very foundation of the Gulf is based on. Yet we're trying to let go of that, as you have just said. So how do you kind of create these contrasts? How do you elevate that and really make people question it without even necessarily reading about it, but to experience the space itself? For us, experience comes firsthand. So trying to keep it short, again, I'm going to say a very short part from David Abrams' The Spell of the Sensuous. Our human-made artifacts inevitably retain an element of more than human otherness. This unknowability, this otherness, resides most often in the materials from which the object is made. So this is, you pour your heart and soul into a physical object and people will feel that. And that's how we operate.
Brilliant. Thank you. And now, Warwick, could I invite you to share a little bit about your work and the mission and the values that underpin it?
Okay, I'll start. my great-grandfather was born in the workhouse in Farringdon, which is quite weird because now I live just up the road in Hoxton. And he left and joined the circus. So that's my great-grandfather. He was a clown in the circus. And then he met my French and my German grandmother, who didn't know what to do with her, and then she became a high diver in the circus. And then they came back to London, and then they lived in... His mother tried to find him and he came back, and they lived in Holloway. And so I lived in Holloway in this crazy environment with my father was a classical musician, my mother came down from Scotland, was a textile artist. And although I felt like I belonged at home, I didn't really feel in the local school and everything, I felt like I belonged. I felt like there was my family and then there was the outside world, because we were quite different to everybody else living in Holloway at the time. And so then for a long, long time, I'd been sort of searching about what belonging... I felt I was an outsider, and what did belonging mean to me? And so eventually, it took me a really long time, it took me till I was 40, to find, in the end, it wasn't about children and it wasn't necessarily about family to me. It was about finding a place that I felt was that I could do anything I wanted, because I was a middle child and I never had my own space. And it was always crazy in our house. But you could make whatever you wanted. So I decided that that's what I wanted. I wanted a place where I could do what I anything I could. And I have a dog, and I do have a partner. So that's all I needed. So then after that was my mission to find out, how do you make work that people can feel like they belong to? How do you make this work that people can be part of and they get something from it as well, and it's not just something that makes you feel good? So I worked on a project. I was asked in Ditchling to work on this project. They asked me what would I like to do, and I said I wanted to make this belonging bandstand, because I like bandstands, because they just appear, it's free, people can play, and it's outside, it's in the public. And they said, okay, Moang, we're doing a project with Carita Kent. She was an American artist who was a nun, and then she was a socialist, and lots of things, and it sort of came together. And I said, okay, can I do my belonging bandstand? And they said yes. So I went to 9 different communities, worked with the group over here. There were a lot of older people, community, with some with dementia and various other things. And this is a young group in New Haven. So I worked with 9 of them, and then we did these word workshops and pattern workshops, and then they described to me how they wanted their placards to be about what belonging meant to them, and I made them for them. And then we made this bandstand that toured to 9 places. And this is my favourite picture, because they said to me that they'd always had... It was part of the Brighton Festival. This is down in Sussex, sorry. I always miss bits out. And this was Brighton Festival. But they said they did lots and lots of things in that community centre. But the moment the bandstand was outside, all the people gravitated towards it, and they all started talking to each other, and they all wanted it to stay. But actually, I think it must be my circus background, maybe my clothes are as well, that I think temporary is actually a good thing. It doesn't have to be permanent. It's actually that idea of when the fair comes to town or something, it makes it much more exciting. And then in Austria, there's an art festival called Stierbecker Herbst, and they asked me, it was actually in 2016 when Brexit happened, which wasn't very good, obviously. And this was all about migration, and this was about open doors, and it was in a public park. And what we were trying to, in Graz, in Austria, there is a big division between cultures. And what we were trying to do with this gallery was make this space where all the cultures could come together. They could all share. They didn't have to be ghettoed or separate from each other. They could all share and be in this space they shared recipes, and they made a recipe book, and it was just really great. And it was there for 3 months. And the idea of the installation was there were many doors, and everybody was allowed to go in whatever way they wanted. There was no restriction. And then what I think is really, really important is about taking these sort of temporary pieces that, if you've seen any of my other work, it gets more and more extreme as I go on. But then when I'm asked to do something for a hospital, I then want to think of it's that thing about what makes you feel warm, what makes you feel good, and simple things do, like cups of tea and various things like that, especially in the UK. And so in this children's bedroom, I wanted to think... because I don't have children, I couldn't really think like I have to think like a child, but I didn't sort of try and take on a child. I just wanted to make a space that I felt was warm, and it was for all ages, and this is it. And then I'm working with methods, and I think this is an interesting thing also, working with different brands to help things happen. So I'm working with methods, and I design these bottles for them. But in return, I said to them, will you give me will you do this project with me, The Garden in Sheffield Children's Hospital? So this is it at the moment. And they have given me a huge amount of money to make this garden possible. And we're starting doing workshops this week. We're doing scent workshops and we're working with the children in the hospital to make this garden for them. So I feel really pleased that the work I've done there has been given money back to the NHS that we wouldn't otherwise be able to do. But, and then I'm just going to end on my trip to Saudi. So when I went to Saudi, it was I really didn't quite know what to expect. What was really amazing is I was given my black hijab, and then everybody actually let me wear my own clothes, which is quite covered anyway. I usually wear big sort of caftan-y thing. So, and it was really wonderful. When we did the talks, it was mainly girls, and the girls were so enthusiastic. And they were just so excited about the fact that I was wearing colour. I was talking about colour, about how, you know, as a woman, you can do whatever you want, and you should go out there and do it. And they, and then we did these workshops, and I've never seen so many amazingly enthusiastic people all in one go in a workshop. It was brilliant. And they were just so wonderful. And then we talked afterwards, and a few girls under their headdresses had green hair. And then I went down to the Eastern Province, or went over to the Eastern Province, and we did another workshop there. And that was, again, another interesting group, because, again, mainly women, and there was one boy in one group. And interestingly, the dynamic changed a bit with the women and the boy, and I had to sort of encourage the girls to stand up to the boy, which was quite an interesting thing. I also went and we visited some young entrepreneurs. And what I think is so amazing in Saudi, in a way, they haven't got the history of design and art in the same current. There's a lot of history of art and things, but in the way design has over the years. So it's this amazing, fantastic melting pot of people being able to make exactly their own history. They can become exactly who they want to be. They can make whatever world they want to be themselves. And I thought that was unbelievable. They're not controlled by the elders that has been here for a really long time, you know. So, it was an incredible experience. Okay. That's me.
Thank you. Thank you both for sharing those insights about your work. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions and then we will open up to the audience. So I've not actually been to Saudi Arabia myself, and I'm sure there are people in the room who haven't visited either and would be really curious just to hear a bit more about the country. You just shared a few snippets with us, Morag. But it'd be great if you could both just paint us a bit more of a picture of what the sort of design and cultural scene is like in Saudi at the moment.
It's crazy. it's so much. It's so many things are happening. I think Saudi is undergoing, as you said, it's kind of writing its own history. It's at a very experimental stage. And that's the beauty of it, at least for me, if I was to speak about myself, but I would speak also about every single person I've worked with. Everyone has this opportunity to make mistakes, to be as vulnerable as possible, and everyone is very receptive. We have just finished working on curating a show that was given to us in 3 months in the historic district, and we brought together almost a group of 40 people to work on it. Most of whom are from Saudi, but we blended that with some international artists. The most brilliant thing was that you have 3 months to curate a show that's basically a big deal, and everyone was like, okay, like I'll jump on that boat with you, I'll do it right away, and it's just no one was like, I need my adequate time to focus. Of course, we all needed that, and we were all complaining about that all the time, but everyone was in it wholeheartedly, and that's the most fascinating thing for me from that kind of anthropological or social kind of observation, I just find it spectacular that you can find that group of people all in one place that could just go ahead and try.
You do work at speed.
Yeah, it's deadlines mean nothing there.
I can't get my head
back. Yeah,
but I just thought it was different to how I imagined. I particularly for me because I'm a woman, and the women were so phenomenally strong. And I met the graffiti artists down in the Eastern Province that do. There's a graffiti street. Mm-hmm. And that was really great, the things that they're doing there, and everybody's just doing it for themselves and just putting it out there, isn't there? Because you have some restrictions on social media, do you?
I mean, oddly enough, not that much. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Nicki Minaj is coming on the 18th. I mean, it's just like, I just don't get it. Like, how do you, it's such a very strange mix of this duality of things that are happening. It's just amazing. But also, like, I think if I were to compare with your experience, we were two people, me and my brother, and the rest of the core team were all ladies working with us. Mm. One of whom is an artist, a very close friend of mine who has never been to Jeddah from Jordan, and she loved every minute of it. We had subs, so it was supposed to be an artist-led initiative. So literally, we were asking people to help us. We're architects, we're not curators. Let's all work together to put this thing in and show people what we can do in 3 months. We had Neda Mujaddidi, she's director, to curate a set of performances that kind of looked at. So they always kind of fed back into the theoretical backdrop, of course. Or we obviously went back into a very architectural kind of analytical approach towards the show we worked in. We looked at the difference between public and private spaces in the historic quarter, but also compared to the rest of the city. And they have all kind of, even non-architects, kind of went into their own readings, observed that, and kind of extrapolated that into their own understanding. Besma Filimban created a book, a street art festival that has community engagement programs. Mm. And this is the community engagement program is something that I can safely say has never happened in that scale in Jeddah before, and she was able to pull it off single-handedly. It's just amazing and incredible to see how people are just very receptive to do stuff like that.
Really,
and
really.
It's just great.
I think it's striking, Morag, how surprised you were by your experiences and how perhaps different it was to what you expected before you went out. Do you have anything you'd like to share or any sort of advice that you would give to other designers about engaging in Saudi Arabia or other Gulf states?
Well, I don't think you should go with a preconception of things. I think that you should go to places with an open mind to actually see what the people are doing in the country, not what you think that people are doing when you hear on the media and things like that. You actually have to go to places and be with people and listen to them and see the right people and then learn from that and not just discard something. Because somebody did respond and said, why are you going, you know, you shouldn't go there. And I think that that's ignorance, because I think that it's about, for me, everything's about people. And if I can go somewhere and show somebody there's a way of doing something, that even if I can only affect one or two people, I think that that's a positive thing for me to have done. And and I think that what is so fantastic, because of just the amount of young people you've got, the energy, and you know, that's what me doing something 3 months now, I'm a bit like, oh please, I'm too old. But you're all young, and so you can just move really fast, and you know, develop really fast, and I think it's surprising how quickly a place can change. You know, I just went to Delhi. I went to Delhi in 2008, and I went to Delhi at Christmas 2018, and it was unbelievably unrecognizable. Everything had changed, you know. So what you don't realize is how fast things change as well. I think that's the thing, in where there is a moment of change, you know, when the change starts, it goes fast, you know. And there can be good things. Things can be lost, and then things can be, you know, there is a, you know, it's all, but I think moving forward is a good thing.
I'd be really interested to hear a bit more from you, Abdulrahman, on the education landscape. And about your background, actually. So how did you get into design? What education was available to you growing up in Saudi Arabia, and how do you see that landscape changing now?
I studied in Bristol. After being in Montreal. So, I mean, the education system, we've both tried teaching, me and my brother, about 3 years ago in architecture school, and I've only lasted for a year. And then while I was going to the second year, it was really difficult because, and I'm strictly talking about the schools of architecture, there is a lack of critical thought and theoretical understanding behind architecture, sadly. It turns into design. And this is something, again, it's one of the things that we always try to do, is to kind of try to cultivate workshops here and there, try to give talks and lectures in different universities. We are constantly invited to go to critique sessions, and we always, most of our employees are either our students or are people that we critiqued or have heard about us. So it's there's different ways. I believe that, or I hope that this changes one day, and that will definitely push me back into teaching. But at this point, I'm just hopeful that it gets better. And I'm sorry if that sounds very negative.
Well, you had a very positive experience of engaging with young people through the workshops that you ran. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
It was just, well, all the RDIs and all the RSA people who went out, we had groups of people coming to listen to us, and they were all girls. And they were just really great. They just asked the right questions. They were very engaged. They wanted to know more about things, and on all different subjects, because some of the subjects, Charlie Patton was about getting water from salt and fresh water, and you know, and it wasn't, and that was as interesting as maybe some of my work. So I just thought there was just amazing. There was just this energy that you got from everybody, and you felt that the only thing for you to do is to say, you know, go for it, be strong, and try and make what you want happen, you know. But it's not always easy, so. But education for women is improving, isn't it?
It is improving, and I mean, if there is a will, there's always a way. So I believe that there is that improvement attempting to happen, but I think education just takes a little bit more time, because you need to build on generation upon generation to kind of let that carry its way through. I'm very hopeful that I'm also talking about like one university in Jeddah. So in Riyadh, the schools are so much better. There's all of these things that are constantly changing, and I really believe that the more and more firms and artists that are visiting and things that are happening will constantly cultivate people to kind of question more and try to understand the world around them more, rather than just strictly focus on the physical aspect of how a building looks like or how it functions. And I think that also serves as an analogy for the rest of the educational sectors.
So zooming out from the Saudi context for a moment, I think it'd be interesting to just think a bit more about mutuality and cultural exchange, which you've both spoken about. Is there anything in particular, or any particular reflections you have on how particular experiences of different cultures have really influenced or steered your own practice in new ways? Perhaps any, you know, any design principles you have that have been challenged or have really evolved in new ways through experiencing different cultures?
Well, when I went to India, I've always used masses of colour, and then when I went to India and to Delhi mainly, and that just absolutely blew my mind because the colour was just amazing, and I was just like, oh gosh, I've got to live here because there's all this lovely colour. But I'd already been doing colour, so it wasn't, it just sort of made, firmed up what I liked when I saw it everywhere as well, and the light's really different and stuff. I mean, for me, because I do lots of projects in different countries, I really loved Mexico just because it's just the people are just so phenomenally amazing. And for me, it's the people. When I go to places and it's working with different people, and because I often build the structures with the local people, and then I'm with those people, I sort of get a different layering. I mean, with this trip I went to, it was more I was taken places, but when I'm actually building, then I get a very different sense of a place, and then I start understanding it a lot more. And I think that for me is fascinating. And I would just, I don't think anywhere is better than anywhere else. I just think it's about learning about other people and not, again, having a preconception about how people live their lives as such.
I mean, I definitely agree. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's the context around you. It's the people around you that really bring a project to life. We've been working on quite a few projects outside of Saudi. I mean, I've been working with concrete a lot. So my very first courses were actually here in London. There are a lot of doing the V&A design workshop was very interesting because we were led into different institutions that kind of pointed us to the right direction. So it's really exactly what you're saying, and I completely agree with it. It's when you're actually physically building something and you run out of the screws that you need and you have to go to that little shop underneath that little shed and talk to that person. It's really those things that elevate these experiences. And for every place, there's a special thing about it when you experience that.
Okay, so now I'm going to open up to the audience for your questions. So please raise your hand if you have a question and wait for the microphone and keep your questions brief. We'll start over here.
Yes, I've got a question for Morag. What have you brought back from the Gulf to inform your practice here in the UK?
What did I bring? Well, that's quite difficult. I wasn't there for very long. So, but it was more really an understanding of a place that I didn't understand. So it's, again, about people. And I don't think it's particularly made a big change to my work or anything like that. But I think it made me understand a place that maybe if I maybe wouldn't have known, you know, if I hadn't been asked, I might not have been a place I would have gone to just because I maybe felt it wasn't right for a woman to go there, you know, all sorts of things in my head. So that's what I really learned. I just thought that actually what was so amazing is there's so many people doing sort of new entrepreneurial work. And I suppose what I would like to do is I like that idea of doing a dialogue with people in Saudi. So at the moment, I'm going to do a dialogue with a young artist in Hong Kong. So I like that idea that there's maybe it's not about me going to make my piece there, but me going and doing having a dialogue with somebody in another country. So that's probably what I learned from it.
Question over here.
Hi, Abdurrahman, I have a question for you. So perhaps I missed that part. I'm sorry I came in late. But the installation of the 22 pieces, what would you say is the main message that you wanted to bring across? Because in the West, people tend to think that all Arab countries are one block, in a way, in their mindset. Was it the differences that you wanted to highlight, mainly? And Morag, thank you so much for your open-mindedness. I'm, as a Saudi woman, I'm very happy that you had a pleasant experience in Saudi. So thank you.
The 22 pieces, you actually did miss that. No, it's okay. It was basically a take or a spin-off from the main reason why Shabak Festival is Shabak Festival, is to cultivate Middle Eastern arts. So we decided to focus and to use geographical child's play as an educational tool for families and children. We believe in design and artwork to be accessible for everyone, so we wanted it. The colors that we used are actually the colors of the Arab League flag. And we really wanted to highlight this very question of what are these borders that lie between these countries. We have four different formations. One of them is the formation of the actual map. The map itself, the shapes themselves are very abstract or abstracted to further accentuate the notion of abstractness of boundaries between countries. And the different formations hint at different political structures that these can take should you be able to shift them around.
And you've just had some new dates released,
yes,
right?
Yes. So if it only appears for one day per venue. So the next venue is on the 13th of July in front of the National Theatre. So please join us there.
Cool. Question over here.
Hi, thanks for the talk so far. I guess my question is, what does the mission-driven design actually mean to you? And maybe when you're working in that way with a mission, how do you really drill down into the sort of the points that you're trying to achieve as part of that mission and what the outcomes might look like?
I think it's to have a mission is to really have a question that might not have an answer, but it's just to be constantly seeking out to resolve different modes of thought, whether be it in Saudi or in Venice or in Uckermark. I mean, in the various places that we've worked, it's always every project kind of questions. We had try to answer your question. We did a project in a forest in Uckermark in Germany, and we learned so much about that area. It was a temporary installation called Temporal Growth, where it was part of UM Festival, which is Uckermark UM, and it's a literature and arts festival. The area itself is surrounded by a farm, which we later learned that the farm is not actually a corn farm. Is that what it's called, a corn farm? Doesn't it have like a name? Anyway. That the corn is not actually eaten, it's actually being used to produce fuel. So the reason why we made our installation was simply four pieces of just white painted pots with corn plants on them. People were invited to actually pull away the corn that grew. I ate some of it, which is pretty good. But it turns into a stage, but it's also a seating area that frames a view. So it's always kind of, it's a response to whatever given situation. So I think that's, in that kind of respect or point of view, a mission is to always give response to any situation you're given with specific project. I'm very project-based, so it's very hard to answer that question abstractly.
Morag, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's about building. For me, my mission is, unless I don't understand what mission is, but it's about sort of building communities and finding ways that people can come together and find their own way within that, not imposing that on them, but finding their own way of how they want to be together. And I like going through that process. I just did a piece in Aberdeen where it was about my mum and dad meeting, but it was also about everybody, about what they felt about Aberdeen. And so then we had all these conversations about they wanted more culture and about their mums and dads meeting at this place and stuff, you know. And so we started this dialogue of things that I don't even always know that it's going to go that way. And so I think it's just learning all the time from doing different projects, but they do always come from more of one single place, which is about belonging, understanding, community, you know, that sort of thing, dialogue. That.
Hi. Oh, is this on? Yes, it is. Hi. You talked earlier about how artifacts separate and bring us together. And cities are much the same, just a sort of a system of moving artifacts. What have you seen that really inspired you in terms of inclusive design in that sense, bringing things together, bringing people together, both in the Gulf and more broadly?
For me, I come from a port city, so everything is interconnected always. Jeddah specifically is a melting pot for different cultures. It's close to Mecca, it's close to Medina, people who are coming for a pilgrimage, but also for trade. So it's something that I was born with and along the course of my life. I could probably safely say about a lot of people in Jeddah, it's very common to interact with different people. I mean, the food that we eat is not, we don't have, in Jeddah, we don't have Saudi food even. It's all of these different cultures that come together. And I think being inclusive in that way is just natural to me.
In the built environment, I think that it's really important not to remove everything that exists and then build something new that's utopian or something. I think it's about building on places that have their good side and their bad side, but they have a character. And if they have a character, then learn how to build on that character. And if they need, and then ways of bringing community back to that place, and then don't, once the community have come back, don't get rid of them again because you want to make loads of money. You know, find ways of getting people to stay in places and grow, and then have their families there and keep rents low and things like that. And I think it's about how, you know, you change. It's a less of a, oh, isn't that big building great?
You know? I agree, like, and especially in the built environment, and that kind of maybe goes back to that very basic notion of the material form, is if you understand the culture and you understand the people that are living in any area, you can actually capture the essence of these materials and embed them in the surfaces of the city itself, whether be it the streets, the walls, or the interiors of some rooms, or just objects in general. I think.
In fact, we've not got long left, so we'll take two questions now, first and second row.
I guess it's fair to say there've been concerns about human rights for some time. Some people might be concerned that it's actually been getting worse recently in Saudi Arabia. Do you think there's a danger that the creative industries are sometimes used as a way of distracting attention from that? Or do you think there's actually a role, a political role, for the creative industries in bringing about change? And if so, could you elaborate on that?
I mean, it's a question that I always ask myself, to be honest. We're a very young firm in Jeddah. We're only 5 years old now, and it's always a question to kind of ask: is it because we're actually good enough that we're getting more recognition Or is it because we're being used as political tools? That was a very kind of, it was a question for us when we were doing the Venice Biennale. Is, okay, sure, there were much older, much more established firms that were doing that. So were we being used to showcase that you have young designers being the face of the country? But then it kind of goes back to that very same question. I mean, we still, after that, we still get projects in Uckermark, in Paris, here in London. So, I mean, you could just flip that question right back to you and say, are we also being used as cultural exchange agents to show that countries are friendly with each other? You know, so I think it's a very rhetorical question. You don't look convinced, but...
And there was a question in the next row.
Firstly, thank you to both of you for your speeches. But my question is more specifically to Morag. So you spoke a lot about the sense of belonging within your mission. I was just wondering, how do you sort of define belonging? Is it people coming together physically? Is it more of a sort of emotional connection to things? Does it differ between places? How do you personally define that sense of belonging to people?
But that's why you do the workshops, because you can't, you don't know to that group of people, it's not what I think, it's what they think. So when you put them all together and you work through a process of words, they start talking with each other because maybe they hadn't even thought about it particularly. And you, I mean, in a very, very basic way with the older people, because their families have left, you know, there are not many families around, that the community centre and friends are really, really important. And so throughout your life, belonging changes as well. So there isn't one thing. It's about how, if you're not connected to a particular thing like religion or something like that, how then do you build the community? And it's each community is individual and they're growing in a certain way, and then you've got to find out what that is for them, and you do that by doing workshops. So I don't lead, you know, I start the conversation and then I learn from them, and that's what I think is so amazing, because I get so much from everybody that I didn't know, and you know, all the time. And I will, when I go to Sheffield Children's Hospital, I work next to the beds of the patients, and I'll learn loads from those children as well. So it's always learning.
Now, I am afraid that we are out of time, so we'll have to wrap up now. But thank you so much for coming and for your questions. And if you didn't get a chance to ask a question, then don't worry, because we can continue the conversations over drinks. So do please stay on for that. But before we finish, I'd like to just say a big thanks again to our partners at the British Council for all their support in bringing tonight's event together. Please do visit their website for more information on the Gulf Culture Programme. You can find all the links on the event page for this on the RSA site. And whilst you're there, you can also find out more about the RSA's design programme and all of the work that we do with students, with industry and in communities to promote design and design thinking as a force for positive social, economic and environmental change. So for now, please join me in a final round of applause for our speakers, Abdulrahman and Morag.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, head to our YouTube channel for inspiring talks, interviews, and animations.